You've tuned in to Naturopathic Earth Radio with certified health consultant and former obese child, A. Gregory Luna, where you get the latest on clean living, natural remedies, effective weight loss tips, and sound naturopathic principles from experts and biohackers from around the world and Gregory himself. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now to a long, vibrant, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth.
Hello, everybody. This is A. Gregory Luna. Of course, you can call me Gregory. Welcome back to another episode of Naturopathic Earth Radio. I hope you are doing well today on this Monday of spring break. For those of you who work in a line of work that has a spring break, or of course, if you have children that are in school, I'm currently at the beginning of my spring break. As you know, I am a teacher. And it's a weird feeling, guys. I think I've mentioned in previous podcast episodes, I actually enjoy teaching. I took Friday off. And the reason I took it off, I was like, well, I have all these days accrued. Why not use them? Because, I mean, what's the point of just, it's like that parable in the Gospels where Jesus gives, I don't remember, like 10 coins to three different guys, and one of them goes and makes money off of it, and then the other one makes a little less money off of it, and the other guy just buries the coins, and then Jesus gets all mad at the guy who buries the coin. And when you think about it, you know, Jesus has been portrayed by a lot of socialists as like the ultimate hippie or the ultimate communist. And in that parable, he's pretty mercantilistic. He's pretty entrepreneurial, and he gets mad at the guy who just saves the coins and doesn't do anything with it. And maybe it's a parable for like having the good news, and you should evangelize instead of just hoarding it at home. But so I decided to use the day, and I kind of knew this beforehand, but I enjoy school. I enjoy the routine of school. I enjoy seeing my students. I love teaching. I love the art of teaching. I love seeing my colleagues every day. And so when I don't work, on days I don't work, I just kind of like do 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 do. And of course, I have hobbies, one of them being this. And I'll go like run in the park and do things that I normally can't do during the day. But at the same time, I feel, and I don't know if some of you feel this when you take a day off for whatever reason, you feel kind of like guilty. You're like driving around town and there's like no traffic because it's 11, 10 a.m. or whatever. And you're like, this feels weird. Like I should be at work. But, you know, we have to enjoy our days. We work way too much. I mentioned that in a couple of podcasts back, how the Europeans definitely have a better joie de vivre in regards to life, and they don't work themselves to death like we do. So we use, on average, much less PTO than other Western countries. So by all means, we should use our days. And if you're in a job that you get days, by all means, use them. And before we start this episode on resveratrol, I want to mention about teaching. I was listening to NPR, and West Virginia teachers were striking to get more pay, and people were calling. It's like, oh, teachers, oh, please, you only work 180 days a year, and it's an easy job, and you get the summers off and the spring breaks off, and et cetera. And, of course, the teacher union guy who was being interviewed, he was like, well, you know, teachers bring their work home, and teachers work late at nights, and teachers work on weekends, and teachers, and even during the summers, they're working, I came from the medical world, and I've been teaching about 8 years, so I used to work in the real world, and look, I don't necessarily agree. It's a very nuanced answer, but in some ways, I do agree. I don't think teachers should complain about teacher pay. It's not like a gun was put to our head when we decided to teach. It's not like we didn't know what the pay was. It's not like we were hoodwinked of some sort. And so we knew what the pay was, and we signed on the dotted line. So I really don't like to hear teachers who talk about how we don't make enough money. Surely our value to society is high, and that should dictate the free market in making us be paid more per hour. In an ideal world, and less money would go to celebrities or pharmaceutical reps or whatever. But that's not the real world. And you can't live in some la-la land ivory tower and just imagine the world the way you want it to be. The real world is teachers aren't paid a lot, but we do get the summers off. We get spring break and all these days off. And you can work a second job during that time and supplement your income. So if you stretch out like how much a teacher, if you're working during the summer at an average wage of what you were getting the other time of the year, I mean, teachers can make $70,000 a year, $60,000-$70,000 a year, which is certainly more than the median income in America. So I am kind of torn. I definitely defend teachers, but at the same time, I don't think the large majority of teachers are bringing work home every day and staying up till 2 a.m. grading papers every weekend, every second. And that's something the teacher unions like to glorify and apotheosize teachers, because that's their job as the union, to make us look like selfless martyrs. But most teachers are not doing that at all. Most teachers, I mean, you do take your work home on occasion, but many times you don't. And the last thing about teaching is a really great job to supplement your spouse's income. So, for example, if your spouse is makes more money than you, is in sales or is an accountant or something like that, and especially if you're female, not to be sexist, then it's a great job, because in the summer you get the time off, and so you can save on daycare if you have children, so you don't have to spend on daycare and you can be home with them in the summer, or you can take them to camps or take them traveling. It gives you a lot of latitude and flexibility, but the onus isn't on you for that teacher salary to be the thing that's going to pay the bills. So teaching is a great occupation if your other spouse is making more money, because it offers some flexibility. Okay, let's talk about resveratrol. But before we do, the website's Naturopathic Earth, NaturoPathic Earth, Naturopathic Earth. Check out the articles, recipes, and whatnot over there. I also have a Patreon account, which is a crowdsourcing account. If you go to the episode show notes of this episode, you can click on it. It's over on www.patreon.com/naturopathicearth. If you'd like to donate $1 or $5 a month, that would be super great. And if you're in the needs for some weight loss, contact me, because I might be able to help. All right, let's talk about the wine. All right, so I wanted to have an episode on resveratrol because it's been in the news for about 10 years, and a lot of people feel like it's a justification for drinking a lot of red wine. It's like, oh, it's my duty. It's my duty to drink red wine because it's good for my heart. It's got resveratrol. Yeah, it's got resveratrol. So let's drink the red wine. Okay, well, we'll discuss this Harvard paper and discuss the kind of the sham that is resveratrol. But you know, there's plenty of places you can get resveratrol that doesn't have ethanol or alcohol in it, like blueberries, grapes, nuts, seeds, all these other places. But
that doesn't have, it's not high enough. See, the only way you can get true resveratrol is drinking 2 glasses of Pinot a night. Yeah, let's drink it up. Vino Veritas, baby.
So I wanted to glean off this article from Harvard Health Publishing. And it says, diet rich in resveratrol offers no health boost. Diet rich in resveratrol offers no health boost. Okay, now, of course, if you're conspiratorially minded, you'll be like, oh, yeah, but Gregory, this is from Harvard. Harvard's bought off. Well, to a certain extent, I probably would agree. But, you know, Harvard did have that study on how fluoride is decimating the IQ of the youth. That was about in 2012. If you go back to that episode on fluoridated water, and they apparently, you know, the shadowy Illuminati didn't shut down Harvard because of that article. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But let's go through this article. Resveratrol, an antioxidant, which antioxidants are things that are anti-inflammatory, or we generally see them as things that fight against cancer. An antioxidant found in red wine and certain foods has been touted as a natural way to slow aging and fight cancer, obesity, heart disease, and diabetes. As promising as it sounds, we really don't know how resveratrol affects humans, since most studies have been conducted on animals and microbes. Didn't know you could do studies on microbes. So a study out this week, and this was in 2015, a study out this week that looks at resveratrol's effect on people from two villages in the Chianti region of Italy, where they know a thing or two about red wine, got my attention. The Chianti's is in Tuscany, if I'm not mistaken, around Florence. Here, hold on, I'm drinking some green tea. Hold on. Scientists at Johns Hopkins, not John Hopkins. See, we always say John Hopkins, right? Scientists at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine analyzed information from about 800 men and women aged 65 and older whose diets were naturally rich in resveratrol from food. They measured the amounts of metabolized resveratrol that showed up in the participants' urine, expecting to see high levels of resveratrol among the healthiest people. But that didn't happen. In fact, there was no link between resveratrol levels and the rates of heart disease, cancer, and health. Dun, dun, dun. The results were published online in JAMA Internal Medicine. Now, JAMA Internal Medicine is not Bob Marley's periodical that's published from the Rastafarian Smoking Dope in Jamaica. JAMA is the Journal of American Medical Association, which is arguably the most prestigious medical journal in the world, next to Lancet, probably, which comes out of England, if I'm not mistaken. Quote, Dr. Richard Semba, lead author, "We were initially surprised by the lack of any apparent protection against heart disease or cancer and no association with lifespan." Right, because they've been, I've been drinking all the Pinot. Quote, "Since limited animal and cell studies suggested that resveratrol might have beneficial effects, I think people were quick to extrapolate to humans." Yeah, I did, right? "In retrospect, this was really oversimplified, but there are still ongoing trials, so one must keep an open mind about possible benefits." He's like in the back of his mind, he's like, oh God, I drink so much red wine. I'm like an alcohol dependent, please. I need this study to come out. Let me bribe some of the scientists. Because I mean, who doesn't want to think that red wine's good for you? Because red wine tastes great. No one can deny that. And so we want that confirmation bias. Why the fuss? You may already consume a fair amount of resveratrol. It's found in foods such as peanuts, pistachios, grapes, red and white wine, blueberries, cranberries, and even cacao and dark chocolate. The plants from which these foods come make resveratrol to fight fungal infection, ultraviolet radiation, stress, and injury. Going back to fight fungal infection, that reminds me of like pectin, and you look at phytic acid, all these things that seeds and nuts release. If this goes back to our episode on why you should soak your nuts, this is probably like episode 5 or 6, way back when. And nuts release toxins because they don't want to be eaten by animals or by predators that are walking by. So they release that to kind of fight off people from nibbling on them. So it kind of reminds me of how resveratrol is made from these plants to fight fungal infections. An army of researchers is scrambling to see if that protective power can be extended beyond plants. An early resveratrol researcher was Dr. David Sinclair, now a professor of genetics at Harvard. He and his colleagues discovered in 2003 that resveratrol could increase cell survival and slow aging in yeast and later in mice by activating a longevity gene known as SIRT1. Since then, we've learned that resveratrol can help with 1, prevent skin cancer in mice, 2, protect against high blood pressure, heart failure, and heart disease in mice, 3, improves insulin sensitivity, reduce blood sugar, and blunt obesity induced by a high fat diet in rodents, protect nerves and the brain in various lab animals. But the dose of resveratrol administered in experiments is always much higher than you normally consume in a daily diet, according to Dr. David Sinclair, the pioneer who came out with this. Quote, "You would need to drink 100 to 1,000 glasses of red wine to equal the doses that improve health in mice." So let's reread that. "You would need to drink 100 to 1,000 glasses of red wine to equal the doses that improve health in mice." So there's two problems here. Of course, one is, unless you're Barney from The Simpsons, yeah, you know, you're going to have alcohol poisoning before you can drink 100 to 1,000 glasses of red wine. And also, this goes back to showing the effect of health improvement in mice. Dr. David Sinclair, who was named one of this year's 2015 Time Magazine 100 Most Influential People for his anti-aging research. He wasn't surprised about the results in this JAMA archive study, which I'm talking about right now. Still, the disappointing results don't mean that resveratrol and other molecules like it won't help extend the lifespan or protect against the development of aging-related diseases. Dr. Sinclair points out that drug companies have now created thousands of new synthetic molecules, quote, that are up to 1,000 times better than resveratrol. They prevent cardiovascular disease and neurodegeneration. They also extend lifespan in mice, close quote. The molecules don't have catchy names yet, with current ones such as SRT-1720 and SRT-2104, but they're showing promising results in mice. Dr. Sinclair is aging, is again helping to pioneer much of this research. All right, so what should you do? If we can't get enough resveratrol from food, which we can't because it's mentioned that you need to drink a lot of wine. So, I mean, that's in one. It's probably you'd have to eat tons of blueberries and pistachios, which probably wouldn't be a problem for me because pretty much every lunch at school is a pint of blueberries and handfuls of a melange of nuts. If we can't get enough resveratrol from food, should we try to get it from supplements? There's certainly plentiful in health food stores, and Americans spend more than $30 million on the supplements each year, just on resveratrol, $30 million. As you might expect, Dr. Sinclair takes resveratrol in supplement form and has for the last 10 years. He's not a medical doctor, but he plays one on TV. So he says he can't recommend it to you or me, all right, because that's a lawsuit pending to happen. But taking resveratrol supplements comes with some risks because no one knows, A, the safe effective dose for humans, right, because only the studies have been done on the mice, and two, how long-term use will affect us for better or for worse. That makes taking a resveratrol supplement a bit of an experiment, sort of like the tests on lab mice. A big difference is that mice have researchers assessing their response to resveratrol, but we don't. No, we don't. If you take a resveratrol supplement or plan to, let your doctor know so you both can be alert for any possible harms. Yeah. If you want to get some resveratrol from red wine, go ahead, but keep it moderate. No more than one drink a day for women and no more than two drinks a day for men. We'll go back to this later. The same advice holds true for any other alcoholic beverage. But if you're looking for longevity from resveratrol, you won't find it at the bottom of your wine glass, or at least for now, in a supplement bottle. So let me go back to the supplement, taking resveratrol as a pill. So about 5 years ago, there was a big kind of brouhaha over a doctor named Dr. Deepak Das, Deepak K. Das. And he was a top researcher at the University of Connecticut, and he was one of the big pushers of resveratrol and how resveratrol in humans worked against anti-aging and anti-inflammation and antioxidant and, of course, heart health and all the things that the common man, if the common man knows anything about resveratrol, knows about it, and that's why we should be drinking wine all the time, right? Well, we find out that Dr. Deepak K. Das falsified data on more than 145 cases to push an agenda, right? To push an agenda. And then you find out that Dr. Deepak K. Das was in cahoots with a lot of, and this is not a surprise, resveratrol supplement companies like Longevinex and these other places that were pushing these wild assertions that taking resveratrol pills will do all the following things that we have just talked about. So he was busted. So it's important to understand that vitamins are not regulated by the government. And if any of you look at your vitamin C, vitamin D, fish oil, pills, whatever you're looking at, look on the back of it. And it says these statements, like for vitamin D, like I take vitamin D pill and they'll say great for bone health, right? It doesn't mention really the real reasons you should be taking vitamin D, but it's like great for bone health. And then there's an asterisk next to it. And I'll say, these statements have not been evaluated by the FDA, you know. So you can essentially, if you're a vitamin maker, put whatever you want. Put whatever you want. I remember I was at the gym and I was watching the TV when I was changing, and there was one of those testosterone pill commercials, and they had Frank Thomas, who was a pretty well-known baseball player in the 90s, and the commercial was for, oh man, it was like Testosterex or something like that. And the commercial is so manipulated toward men. So it's like two women and they're talking and they're like at the gym and then they say, hey, is that Frank Thomas? And then Frank Thomas is surrounded by three attractive women. Wow, he looks great. He's 55. Let's go talk to him. And then they go talk to him. It's like, Frank Thomas, you look great for your age. How do you do it? And of course, he's surrounded by all these beautiful women. And he's like, well, I take, you know, Testosterone X. And then they go to a scene of him lifting weights. And then it's like really fast. Testosterone is known to have a secret patented chemical element in it that's going to raise your testosterone naturally. And they say it really fast. And of course, there's all these asterisks in the statement. And then there's all this super fine print on the bottom when they're making all these assertions. And it's like not evaluated by the FDA, not evaluated by the FDA. You know, results may differ depending on the person, just like diet pills, just like Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig, all those commercials. They always put that in the bottom because they don't want to be sued later on if you're on Weight Watchers and don't lose weight. And so the commercial is brilliant because, again, it talks about, and by the way, one of the girls in it is like, I wish my husband took it. And then Frank Thomas says, yes, because it does make a difference in the bedroom. And then all the women laugh. So, of course, it's manipulating men because, first of all, you think, well, if I take these pills, I'm going to be surrounded by all these beautiful women, even though theoretically the beautiful women are actresses, of course. But even if Frank Thomas were to get these beautiful women, it's because he's a former baseball player, not because he's taken some pill. If you're a schlub, your mate value isn't going to skyrocket because you're taking this pill. But it's very, very subtle. So they tell you, oh, okay, so subconsciously, it's like, if I take these pills, I'm going to have all these beautiful women around me. If I take these pills, I'm going to get muscles like Frank Thomas. If I take these pills, I'm going to be a tiger in the bedroom. So going back to resveratrol and the supplements and this doctor who was caught falsifying, you can put whatever you want on these vitamins. And actually, if you look at some of the studies, the dosing doesn't even have to be reflective of what the bottle says. So it could say 500 IUs of vitamin D, but it might not even have 500 IUs of vitamin D. It could have like 100. So in some ways, the vitamin industry is a total sham. It's just better to try to eat a well-balanced diet and then be very selective on the pills that you do take. All right, let's take a break and review. Okay, so the last thing I want to mention, this goes back to NPE episode probably in the 20s about how alcoholism has skyrocketed the last 15 years. And I wanted to go over some of the drinking guidelines. I recommend you go back to that episode. It is very short where I actually break down like how many glasses of alcohol you're supposed to have to be considered alcohol dependent and how much are you supposed to have to be considered an alcoholic in general. But I wanted to bring this up because a lot of people think that resveratrol is good for you and therefore gives you carte blanche to drink a lot of alcohol. And I used to think this. You know, I probably found out about resveratrol about 15 years ago, back when I was listening to all the conspiracy radio shows. And I thought, wow, I guess red wine is good for you, right? Because you believe what you hear and you might not have as much discernment. And I started learning about resveratrol and the hype in red wine maybe about 3-4 years ago when I was into the paleo world. And here's the issue. I mean, resveratrol is good for you. Definitely eat the food sources where they are located in the berries and the nuts and so forth. By all means, you don't want to avoid it. I think the cautionary thing is be careful on the supplements because, as the article mentioned, we don't know what's a safe dose. We don't know what's the long-term effect. But I think the bigger problem with the supplements is we really don't know if it's in there or not. And if you are going to do resveratrol supplements, probably go high-end and the expensive ones because those probably are more legit. But even so, that article, the Harvard article I just quoted, says that there's no study showing that it has any effect on humans. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we shouldn't be eating foods that are high in resveratrol, because if you look at the berries and you look at dark chocolate, all those have great other effects, other phytonutrients and polyphenols, and they're high in fiber. So we should certainly eat those. But the issue with alcohol, of course, is the ethanol. And the effects that alcohol have on the body overall are much more pernicious, and much more detrimental to your health than any benefits that you could get from resveratrol, especially after we just went over the study where there's other food sources you could get it. There's no source studies showing it's actually beneficial in humans. And it only works in mice in super high doses. So no, if you are drinking alcohol, in particular red wine, just to get the resveratrol, you need to stop. That's not to say we shouldn't be drinking red wine. I went out last night with a quote-unquote friend, and I had two glasses of red wine, two Malbec. I like the Malbec. And actually, let me go over this. Okay, so I wanted to go back over the stat that I mentioned in that alcohol episode. So for healthy adults in general, drinking more than these single day or weekly limits is considered at risk or heavy drinking. So for men, no more than 4 drinks on any day and 14 per week. So you got to keep under that number. If you're over that number, you're at risk or a heavy drinker and prone to be an alcoholic. And for women, it's no more than 3 drinks on a day or 7 per week. Now, this number used to be 8. But since I recorded that podcast on alcoholism in America, which I think was in the spring, I went to the National Institute of Health, which is the official keeper of these stats, and they've revised it down to 7. So you think, oh, Gregory, this is a double standard. Men can drink twice as much. Well, apparently. Now, I don't know how much of this is sex specific or how much of it is just the weight difference between men and women. So if you're a 5'10", 160 woman, maybe you can be closer to 14 per week. But don't kill the messenger. I'm just quote you the stats here. So 7 drinks a week. And it also says about 1 in 4 people who exceed these limits already has an alcohol use disorder, and the rest are at greater risk for developing these and other problems. Again, individual risks vary. People can have problems drinking less than these amounts, particularly if they drink too quickly. So, this last week, I probably drank more than I've really ever drunk before. I mentioned in that Valentine episode that I am single now. So I had two drinks of wine on Monday. Two drinks on Sunday. Two drinks of wine. And these are all wine because that's not true. Two drinks of wine on Sunday. Two drinks of wine on Monday. Nothing on Tuesday. A glass of beer on Wednesday. 2 glasses on Thursday. And 2 glasses yesterday. So let's do my mathematics here. So that is Sunday to Sunday. I had 9 drinks. 9 drinks in a given week. So I'm way below, man. I need to go drink 5 glasses right now, right? But I want to bring this up because it's very easy to go, especially with women. 7 drinks a week is not a lot. Because if you're already, and I mentioned this in that episode on alcoholism, if you're already drinking a glass of wine a day just to calm down during the work week, so let's just say you do one Sunday to Thursday, whatever. That's 4 drinks you're doing right there, maybe 5 right there, boom. 5 drinks. That's 5 right there. And a lot of people, we drink on the weekends or you want to go out and get a little tipsy. Lord knows, and I think I've mentioned it before here, if I'm dehydrated, if I went running or steaming or just in general, I feel buzzed after 1 glass of alcohol. I am the lightest of the lightest lightweights of all time when it comes to drinking. I cannot hold my alcohol. You wouldn't have to slip me a roofie at all, okay? Because 1 drink, that's why I never drink more than 2 drinks. And that's why, honestly, I've never been drunk because a lot of it's just a question of control and I like to be in control. But 2 drinks is always my max. Probably aside from a trip I took to Italy a couple years ago where I was enjoying, doing as the Romans do, I probably had a little more than 2, but I don't think I've ever been drunk. I get drunk or I get buzzed really, really quickly. And so going back to 7 per week, it's really easy to go past these limits, more than 3 drinks in a given day. I mean, how many times do we go to a bar and have a couple glasses of beer and a shot of something? So I just want to bring this up as a cautionary tale, because we think of alcoholics or alcoholism or alcohol dependence or heavy use drinking as like Barney from The Simpsons, or someone who's throwing shot bottles against the wall and screaming at you, like my dad used to on occasion. But he wasn't really throwing things, but he would definitely scream at us when he came home drunk. We think of the kind of the stereotypical alcoholic, but that's not true. I mean, the typical what we perceive to be alcoholic are much more functional, and they're just alcohol dependent. They need it to release the anxiety. And I was listening to a podcast about Elizabeth Vargas. She was the ABC anchor who admitted that she was an alcoholic. And so she wrote a book about it. And I was listening to her interview, and it was fascinating how she would talk about how her anxiety, it's the anxiety that fuels the alcoholism. And I think I've mentioned this in a previous podcast, so I'm going to keep it short. But she would get anxious about going on air live in front of tens of millions of people, because she was the ABC news anchor for the 5:30 news, the national news. And so she started to drink a glass beforehand to kind of wind her down. Right. And then, of course, she developed a crutch for that, right? A reliance on that, which is understandable. And then the alcohol made her anxious because she would have some sort of withdrawal of alcohol when she wasn't drinking it, which would fuel her to drink more alcohol, which would then fuel the anxiety, which would fuel the alcohol. And then she was in this horrible spiral where, you know, she would not show up to work and be gone for days, and it destroyed her life, you know. So it's an issue. So My point is this: just don't drink red wine for the resveratrol. And in general, definitely a life of not drinking red wine is almost a life not living. Now, I know there are some people here who don't drink wine or alcohol at all, and more respect to you. I went probably 15 years of not drinking any alcohol at all. And if that's your lifestyle, or if that's what you choose, more power to you, more credit to you. But in general, for most Americans who drink red wine, I'm not saying that you should never drink it, but of course, everything in moderation in the government. And on this regard, I do trust the government's numbers here. And in this regard, women shouldn't be drinking more than 7 glasses a week of any alcohol, and men shouldn't be doing 14. So just everything in moderation, as with all food and clean eating food, and even like cakes and donuts, just everything in moderation, and just take care of yourself. All right, the last thing I want to mention is, of course, is post a review for NPE Radio on iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast. If it helps you in any way, if you find any merit from it, please post a review. It's a little way you could help me out, and it would make a big deal for me. So guys, enjoy your spring break. If you're on spring break, I know some of you parents have kids on spring break, and you're like, damn, what am I going to do? I got to take days off? Or do you put your kids in the camps, or not the FEMA camps, but do you put them in like summer camps? So it can be a little inconvenient for some of you parents here. But in general, just enjoy your spring break, and hopefully you're having some great weather. Until next time, guys, take care. God bless. Bye-bye.
Earth Radio. Visit us at www.naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Twitter at Naturopath Earth, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. And remember our core belief at naturopathicearth.com. Let food be thy medicine, let nature be thy healer. See you next time. Music courtesy of Art of Escapism.